Welcome to the Leader Think podcast, where we discuss personal growth, human performance, and culture change. This is your host, Philip Grison. Thank you for joining me on this path. I hope you enlighten others along the way.
Good morning, everybody. I have my wonderful friend, my influential friend, Daniel Maxson here with us today with New South. He's always been a leader in the industry, always pushing the envelope to get people to think differently. And Daniel wants to talk about empowerment today. I'm not sure where we're going to go with this and who all we're going to empower. But hey, Daniel, let's talk about empowerment.
Hey, Philip, thanks for having me and looking forward to this podcast and just this general discussion about, I think, that most folks could agree on, just the power of empowerment.
So what are you thinking? Who do you want to empower? When you say empowerment, and I assume we're talking in construction safety, who is it that you want to feel empowered?
So I think when we think of the word empowerment, the cool thing was is when I was just preparing to kind of think about, you know, where should we kind of go with on this podcast and this word empowerment, it was amazing that anytime I would just approach about 11 people, just, hey, what is your thoughts on empowerment? Without hesitation, I think each one of the people was passionately just off the cuff, said it right away that this is what empowerment means to me and why is it important. And it just was intriguing to hear what those people had to say and the feedback and the energy that came back from them. And I'm just like, man, why is this word so impactful? And why does it matter?
What did they perceive? What was their perceptions of what empowerment meant?
So some of the feedback that I got was, you know, when I asked some safety professionals, like, what is your thoughts? Like a handful of them that were bilingual, they, right off the cuff, they just immediately thought about the worker and was like, you know, a lot of these workers out there, they're just like, I feel like they look up to me and they feel empowered that when they get to speak to me, they're able to speak through me. They feel more engaged. They feel more empowered to do and say and work safe on the job site because they feel like, hey, this GC safety professional, it's got my back and I can explain it and articulate it in such a way that makes them feel comfortable. So out of the four bilingual individuals I talked to, three of them just went straight to that. And I kept on saying, hey, well, what does it mean to you? And why is it important to you? And still a couple of times they went straight back to the worker. So their external focus on empowerment, but then when they had to relate it back, it's like, well, it's super empowered because I can't function in the day if I don't feel like I have the support. So the empowerment
is a support thing.
It's a support thing.
A support thing. So I can come to the GC safety rep with my problems and they're not going to tell me I'm wrong. They're going to seek to understand and hopefully do something about it.
That's right. And so back to your question about who. And so when I started researching it more and more, you know, the levels of empowerment, you know, there's various different levels. You got the organizational, right? You got more like company, organization, whatever organization you're part of. You have managerial, and then you have individual. So I think there's multiple levels because even if a supervisor feels like they empower the employee, or if the employee feels empowered to speak up, I think it starts with the organization that really just trickles down and says, hey, we are going to empower our people or our whoever is part of our organization. You are empowered to do this, to be successful, to speak up, to enforce, to create and what have you. So I think it starts with that organization, but then and it also could start with individual, then that could influence up to the organization. So it's kind of full circle thing, but there's various different levels that, you know, in my research of empowerment that we have to take in consideration.
And totally agree that empowerment starts with systems up at the top that allow the worker to feel empowered. You know, when you wanted to talk about this, I had no idea where you were going to go. So the first thing, just Googled what the heck is empowerment. And the first definition I got was the authority or power given to someone to do something. And that triggered the thought that in a lot of organizations, safety policies are developed up at the top and then they're pushed down on the worker. And, you know, sometimes don't fit the context of the work. But I think anytime, and I see it in my own life, when corporate pushes down, here's the new policy that thou shalt obey, there's always that pushed down on you feeling where can we create a system where workers help develop policy? Because it's such a different shift, you know. Power given to someone to do something. Do workers have a say in developing the policies that they've got to follow? Because if it's pushed down on them, of course they're going to resist. This doesn't fit. That's some guy in a cubicle. He doesn't know what it's like in the real world. But if they have a say in what the policy is, then it's something they created. There's so much more support, empowerment there.
Truly is. And then the second part of that definition, when you look it up, and I looked up similar what you did on, okay, let's look at the root of the definition. The second part of the definition says authority or power given to someone to do something. And there's more to it, but the authority and power, right? And so if you look at everything you just said, and you are truly enforcing and helping and assisting somebody in or an organization to achieve the somewhat desired result, it has nothing. I mean, and that's why, you know, when you look at OSHA, you know, it does nothing that competent person has training or whatever, or what have you, has nothing to do with anything if that person or the individuals do not have the authority. So
right.
The key thing to empowerment, and I truly believe that if you look at all these words, various different words to trying to be successful and various other things that surrounds on why we can be successful in an organization, you can root many, many, many words. I think the true trunk of the tree, if we were to kind of put a figure to it, the mass of being successful starts with empowerment. Because if we try to create processes, we meet, we start goals, we do all this, and it's just like, hey, go. Well, we communicated it. Why isn't the desired task? We need to start looking at, was that person, did that person or those individuals really feel empowered to move the ball forward? Right. Or empowered to execute? Because then there's that perception, right? And of well, I didn't do this because I didn't think that you would like it this way or what have you. And I think that if you are in leadership or if you're an individual or what have you, I think you focus on, hey, does my project site or does the individuals that I'm trying to influence, ask them, do they really feel empowered? And if they don't, what are some obstacles that we can kind of work on to move out the way so that we can move the ball forward? And one of the, you know, a couple, when you look at the pillars of empowerment, you know, number one is self-awareness. Number two is self-compassion. And number three is self-mastery, right? We need to make sure that we look at the self, that we need to reflect on what is going on and then move forward and then see if we can get the mastery thing going.
Oh, definitely. Okay. So there's a lot of good thoughts. You know, when you say self-awareness, the first thing I think of is if I'm a leader, do I have the self-awareness of the struggles of the worker, how systems might make it harder to comply with safety requirements? And that self-mastery, I think there's a lot of development and systems thinking, all that that comes along with that, influence, how to communicate, all that as well. You know, I kind of want to circle back that power given to someone to do something. So in a safety context, I think it starts with, do workers have some kind of say in how safety's managed? You know, bringing this concept, because it's kind of come up in classes, just thinking about it and you wanting to talk about it. A lot of times I'll hear safety people focus more on, do workers feel empowered to stop work? But that's such a, you know, if they're empowered to stop work, that's all great and wonderful. But how many system failures did we have if it took a worker to stop something? So I'd love to focus more on, where can we have workers feel empowered where we don't have to stop work? We can change the system that led them to have to stop work in the first place.
It goes back to, we say that we communicate, we communicate, we communicate. And it never fails that we say, when we really dig into something, are we effectively communicating? Did the person or the persons or the individuals really understand the true task? And did they repeat back to you? Do you truly understand that they really grasp on what is being communicated, right? Eliminate the perception, because perception is 98% reality, right? We all kind of heard something like that. We want to be clear on the goals and expectations. We want to support the need and really engage the need for support them by providing, you know, resources and help and removing the obstacles. And then we need to have the autonomy, you know, to make sure that the right condition in the right system or the right message is truly being communicated. And then we need to follow up to make sure that, hey, we need to let our hair down. We need to really just come back and be open on this. And whatever the topic may be, we talk about safety because that's what the focus of the message is. I think even in STEMs in your household and everything else you do, do you really feel empowered all the way around? And if you don't, can you clearly and effectively communicate, one, why we can't get this, or two, you know, or on the flip side of, like, what is the message that we are truly trying to clearly communicate to get the task going? Because I really feel like, you know, when as a supervisor or an organization, when they don't see the end result, I really feel like that people have to go back to make sure that people are truly empowered. You can't just say, force a you know, a square peg in a circle and say, hey, this is what we're going to do and get on the ship and go. And then in their head, they mentally think that I clearly communicated, you know, what my message was.
Okay, Daniel. Okay, so that's a good one. You know, it's a cliche statement, but, you know, a large percentage of communication is listening, right? And you mentioned that pillar of self-awareness. So if I'm the leader, I can communicate what my vision is, but a huge part of that is, how do we achieve this? What are the obstacles for you to achieve this? What's getting in your way to achieve this? What do you need to achieve this? And I think that's a huge part of the empowerment piece, because, again, a lot of times I think workers feel kind of talked down too. And that's all great and wonderful. That's your vision. But how do we achieve that, right? You know, what do you need? What's in the way? What are we doing that might be creating barriers to achieving this goal? How can I make it easier for you to achieve this vision? And that brings in this, you know, the say. Do the workers have a say? And I mean, you could insert subcontractor GC relationship, whatever you want, whether it's worker to supervisor or trade partner to GC or GC to client even. How do we work together to accomplish that goal?
Well, to me, it's everything you said and more. And I feel like that a lot of people, they feel like are they overwhelmed? I think if you go back to you focus on the why is it important? And if you identify the why, right? Okay, well, production goals and quality this, and hey, we just want to be more safe and everything else. You know, we can sprinkle in the mental components of why people are you know, getting hurt and things aren't being built the right way the first time, and kind of revert back to like what is in going through people's heads, and you know, are they listening? Are they shaking their head, but are they really listening? I think you can sprinkle a little EQ, emotional intelligence. I mean, you can sprinkle a lot of things, but I think it boils down to, you're right, you know, a lot of people listen to respond instead of listening to understand.
Amen.
And I think if we really focus on that, and I talk to a lot of folks when I feel like, you know, the response is too quick or it's aggressive, it's like, okay, hey, first of all, where are we at here? Are you just trying to respond to me, or are you really trying to understand what the task, what is the task that we're trying to really accomplish together? Because if you're in a state of mind, we can just regroup here. But if not, like, let's kind of regroup and truly understand what we're trying to accomplish here. And I think if more and more people focus on, you know, those tangible items, those things to kind of really understand kind of where we're trying to go at as an organization or the task at hand, I think we can get really into it. I think too many people are on a high horse, or they're just overly busy, or they're just used to doing a certain thing all the time, right? And it's a habit. If we tear through some of those things, those habits and various other things, and really just humble ourselves to understanding that we have to truly empower. It's a squishy topic. And if we really focus on empowerment, I think we'll start really understand. I feel like we'll start really getting the desired tasks and the motivation of where we're trying to get the goal of what everything. I also participate in various high school functions and various other things as an outreach and everything. And it's awesome to see, especially with some of the military programs that I participate in, where some kids will start one way. And then at the end, you'll start seeing that change, that shift and everything. And just, you know, at first they come in, they're one way and they're shy and everything else like that. And then eventually, as you're talking to them and you empower them and then you encourage and you get, you know, you put all these functions for them to succeed, and you see this young individual just rise to the occasion and says eureka, and now they're that leader. It all boils back to that person really felt empowered, and they were set up for success. Were they beat down a couple times on words and various other things? They were, but eventually they got to where they need to go. And I've seen it firsthand, especially as you know, I hire a couple of the younger safety professionals. It's one thing as they come in and they know the rules, they know what to do, they know how to speak, but until they get their feet about themselves and feel empowered, they say, "Hey, man, this organization, this superintendent really truly trusts and empowers me to do the right thing." That's when the magic happens. I really feel like the empowerment, I know we keep coming back to the word empowerment because that's what the topic is about, but I really feel like if you really are trying to make that change or that shift within your organization, I think empowerment is that secret sauce to that awesome dish that you're trying to prepare and get the right reactions when people buy into that.
Yeah, you know, okay. So you're all around effective leadership skills, right? And I think that's the start to a lot of this. And it's kind of funny because when I was researching empowerment, stumbled across, it was more of an HR perspective. But one of the things that they listed as a specific system is, can we help managers become better leaders? Do we have growth plans for managers? Do we help them learn how to influence better? But of course, do we also monitor their leadership skills? Do we measure that? Do we have a gauge on that? That a lot of frustration with some managers might be that we're not really measuring, coming up with growth plans for their leadership skills, helping them, well, definitely holding them accountable for that, coaching, mentoring, because that I think is the start there. I want to make people feel empowered, which is an influence skill, So what does that leadership development, mentoring, coaching, redirecting, and accountability program look like? And for a lot of organizations, that's the most overlooked thing we've got, right? I mean, a lot of people don't even do that stuff. Some do.
They do. Some have that. And you know, not everybody's made for certain types of leadership, right?
But true.
You know, and so when we try to reach as many people as possible on this topic, I think that each person that is listening to this podcast, one, you have to first self-reflect and humble yourself to say, okay, I'm not getting those desired tasks, or this did not go the way that I intended it or would like this to do, whatever that is, if it's a policy or, you know, a goal or a task or whatever. And if it's not happening, it's a lot of times we point that one finger and we realize, man, there's multiple fingers pointing at me when I point, you know, externally. And I think what we have to do and concentrate more on is self-reflect and understanding that, you know, we have to get everybody on board with, or we have to get ourselves on board with what that task is. I do not like when, you know, I get a safety report or an accident or incident report and it says, you know, the employee needs to do something differently as a result of the accident. Well, one, when you go investigate why the event happened, you come to find out that the employee was truly trying to do the right thing. Now, whether they got hurt or if there's a safety observation, well, the employee or whatever was doing what the supervisor really wanted to do. Now, if you ask them, if you really dig into it, they know it was wrong or they could have done something differently, but they truly did not feel empowered, right? Or the supervisor, we'll take a layer up. The supervisor really knows, you know, that this could be going differently, but did they feel empowered by their office to do it differently? They've always, it's the culture, right? It's the mentality. So I think when we look into and we're trying to, you know, if we want to take that banner and charge into the battle of okay, I'm going to focus on empowerment. I think you first look into self-reflection of and then what are you trying to change? What are you really trying to accomplish? And is it achievable? And then maybe it's something that you got to pass the buck down in the future, and then it's a long-term goal. But because a lot of people will choose all their you know, hard tackled goals up front, and they really meet some resistance, and then it's like, man, you know, this is too hard. And then they just like, I'm not going to worry about empowerment. I'm not going to worry about changing. I'm not going to do this because it's too hard. Well, start with the achievable goals at first, win inch by inch, rather, before you start taking that mile approach to everything. As far as, you know, changing the overall approach to empowering the workforce, empowerment, it can be stretched out. And I think that it goes back to what you were saying. It's all about accountability. Is the accountability, are you in your organization or whatever you're trying to improve upon, are they open to the accountability part of it, of change for empowerment? And, you know, can we take it lighter rather than, you know, full force? Or maybe some people just like to take the cold plunge and just go in on it. It's all about your risk tolerance. And then I think that not so much just the accountability from a negative standpoint, I think that the employee engagement of positivity actually has way more of a lasting effect of walking around and empowering. It's like, hey, man, you know, what do you think about this? Do you think if we try it this way, we can get this, we can get a better result? And then you see the light, you see the wheels starting to turn, the light bulb starting to turn on and everything. Well, what do you think we should do? And you get them engaged. Well, I think this, that, and the other. I think we should institute that. What do you think? And
right.
I guess the people are listening and I would challenge you, if you're not out there really talking to your, you know, the up, the down, wherever position you are, if you're really not just talking the workforce, if you want to change the workforce or your bossman or whatever, if you're not really trying to engage them and really focus on the empowerment, I think you need to retool and get back to basics.
You know, okay, Daniel, I love all that. And you know, I think sometimes people listen to this kind of stuff and they think, well, this all sounds good, but, you know, can I just get people to think this way? And sometimes they struggle, which we need organizational systems, right, to make sure this happens. And we talked a lot about the leadership development, accountability side. We talked about having workers participate in developing policy. I want to go to learning teams for a minute, because I think that's a formalized way that we could have systems in our organization that make this happen. And I wanted to share, I'm going to name drop one of my friends over here, Anthony Fincher with Marathon Electric. They went down the whole human performance path, and they formalized learning teams in their organization. And I just got a call from Anthony this week, so I was kind of thinking about him. Was busy teaching and, you know, talked to him later. But the context was, they're doing formalized learning teams. They feel like they have made major achievements as far as safety, performance, production, all that's going great. And Anthony had a quality issue. And the first thing, when I talked to him, it's, you know, a few hours had passed, and he's like, man, I already know what you're going to say. You're going to tell me to do a learning team. And I was like, well, yeah, you already know. And so he was said that there's his solution is I need to do a learning team on our quality issues so I can find the struggles that other people are facing. What are the obstacles, the barriers? Listen, right, with intent to understand all that stuff you're saying and make some organizational changes. And you know, that learning team thing, right? I mean, that's what it's all about. That do we set up groups of 5 to 8 people who are doing the task, you know, one facilitator, and learn from them? What are your struggles, and what would you do differently to manage these issues? Is that a formal process in the organization? Or is that just some kind of thing that we hand off to people as a good idea, right? And I think people like yourself, you've got all the self-awareness and you'll go talk to people, but I definitely think it needs to be formalized, whether it's an event where somebody got injured, whether it's a quality issue we're struggling with, whether somebody's doing the task wrong. Do we implement formal learning teams with 5 to 8 people who do the work and get all the managers out of the room with just one person to listen, right? What are the struggles so I can learn from that? What are the barriers? What do you think we should do to make things better here?
I think that, you know, what is purpose of learning teams, right? And it's the opportunity for collaboration. I mean, it's really getting the minds in the room without bias, right? You don't want the certain levels because it will discourage X, Y, Z. Hex. A lot of times you don't even need the safety professional in there or the quality professional, whatever you're trying to do there. I mean, I've always asked the question to a lot of people to see what they would tell me. And the question I would ask is what is the difference between quality and safety? And people will just sit back.
Not much.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like, what is the difference? If you remove the human moral component out of it, right? You just take that person, right? We do safety to protect a person or people or whatever. If you remove people or person out of that statement of safety, you look at it, safety and quality are the same. They're on the same level. And it really is executing the correct. Where did we go wrong that caused this defect or this injury, right? So the safety and quality are hand in hand. I always say safety and quality are just byproducts of a well-oiled machine. You know, we need to make sure that we're just on par with understanding, you know, what those are. So tools and exercises like learning teams on really just leaving the logos or the titles at the door, and let's really roll up our sleeves to kind of understand kind of what is our current this, what really went wrong, or why did things happen, and really understand without bias how to kind of move the ball forward, and then hopefully potentially put systems in place to hopefully prevent something, you know, from happening again. So I think when we at the root of of learning tools. It's opportunity for collaboration. And in collaboration, one of the first things of setting up for success is, does everybody feel empowered? And then if they're not, how do you create that sense and that culture within the room of empowerment? Because something went wrong. Somebody created something to happen. So the defense is up, right? And so I think one of the biggest things, I mean, at first, when you have the learning teams and everything else like that, you know, the defense is up because everybody's just trying to understand, you know, what is that and where it is. And if I think when you truly get everybody engaged and understanding that, hey, this is really just to understand kind of what happened, you know, look at all levels of spectrum and not just look at the bullseye of, hey, employee did this and this is why it happened, or hey, supervisor made this decision and this is why it happened. And then really truly understand the systematic approach of that's the true cause, right? A lot of the time, not every time, but majority of the times, I think that's the systematic cause. And do we need to change some things, update this? Or is it truly, you know, certain factors that are involved that led to that? So I love that you brought up learning teams. I think learning teams is something that more folks, if you don't do that, I mean, you should definitely consider it. It's a powerful thing.
It is, you know, and I just, you know, again, hoping people take things away from this. And what does that look like? That when you have one facilitator, you know, we got all these labels, right? Supervisor, manager, and then you have people below them on the org chart. And when you flip that around where there's one facilitator that may be a higher up in the organization, but they're surrounded by people who do the work, it always changes the conversation because they're outnumbered. And instead of the traditional, you know, accident investigation where you've got one worker, maybe two, surrounded by a bunch of managers, it definitely, and I'll use that word empowerment, it empowers people to speak up when they're part of that pack, right, of their peers. And the other thing, and I want to give Marathon some more credit, that when they went down that path, they introduced, you know, a lot of human performance concepts to people in the organization, but they were specific on who they chose to be a facilitator of a learning team. There's a guy, David, that they have that does that. And we're checking all these boxes that you're talking about, that David had that self-awareness. David had the ability to prove himself wrong. He had that reflection that you're talking about of how am I contributing to make this more difficult for people to be successful. And he was the right personality type. So I think it's imperative that not only do we make learning teams a specific organizational system, but we do need to be somewhat selective on who the facilitators are. Are they the type of people that have the self-awareness, the ability to reflect and be open to new ideas, all that kind of stuff? But we could do that, right? There are great people in every organization that would be masters at learning teams. And you know, one more thing on that too. I think there's we want workers to bring up ideas, but new ideas are never start out polished, right? So there needs to be a little bit of, can we try out some of these new ideas, refine them? With that knowledge that no first try of a new idea is going to be perfect. We're going to try it out and we're going to see, well, it's a little rough around the edges over here and we'll need to tweak it. But a little bit of, you know, allowing people to try out new things to improve new systems and new ideas, that's going to empower people too, especially, hey, they're trying out my idea. They're really doing it. And yeah. So do we make that room for that?
So learning teams are not just only from an event, an event happening, like something that is negative. That's why we're coming together as learning teams. I think something cool too, that, you know, we try to institute on various projects is that, hey, bring workers in, feed them and let them talk about general things that are on the job site that can improve for that specific job site. and everybody understand that every environment that you are, whether you're in construction or in general industry, whatever industry you're in, or you could be a teacher trying to improve your room and your classroom, and that's why you're listening to this. I think when you understand the benefits of engaging individuals, right, who perform something versus only managing, involving the head of the table that then is trying to get everything. When you start bringing people in the room and asking them their advice on how to improve and how would you do it if you were in this, and you got to understand that people, you still may get that one word answer, but don't accept that as this is what this person doesn't want to talk. Like, you got to dig in a little bit more, and then add more fuel here, add more, you know, material here, and then add more oxygen. And I think that when you create that flame of discussion that triggers people to want to provide input on various other things, I think that's when you start creating the magic of something happening, of a desired, you know, whatever the task. I try to be vague and not only specifically make it about, you know, improving our construction job sites, because I realize that there are folks that are outside of our industry or what have you that listen to the podcast, because it's whatever the desired item that you're trying to accomplish. And again, it goes back to self-reflection and all those other things, because I really feel like a lot of people feel like they've done it so much and they can't relate. I also want to mix in a little bit of, hey, you're in the room and you have these folks and you're trying to affect change somehow, some way, or improve something. Are we understanding the generational thing, right? You have folks that are a certain age, you know, the youngers, the mids, the olders. And then how does that mix and mingle and understand that there are going to be assertive dominance and people listen and perform differently? It's so amazing after I started mixing in the generational or taking in consideration of, you know, I have a, you know, we have a 24-year-old, you know, a safety professional versus a 55-year-old, and seeing how that interaction happens, and where one looks at the one individual and says, you know, you don't know what I've been, and then you got the younger person says, you're just old and outdated and you don't know what I know, and I have it all at the palm of my hands, and I actually know more than you. And it goes back to the mentorship of whatever have you. We're not going to dive too deep, but you know, it's trying to understand, trying to create that right atmosphere, the right culture, and allow it to happen organically. And a lot of times it might be, you know, you start these learning teams, and you know, and it might be met with, you know, it might not go the way you think. Like, hey, I'm going to start a learning team and get it going. Don't get discouraged if it doesn't go right. You just learn from it because it's a learning team. And then you improve on the process. Maybe it's the wrong atmosphere, or you have it on the job site and you have all these noise and you have people coming in and out of the room, or maybe you have it at a, you know, a Top Golf or something. And now it's like you truly have all these distractions. And I say that you create the right atmosphere for people to succeed in learning tool teams. And then you do less talking and more listening. And it's all about, okay, we talked about these things. Now, what are we going to do about it? You got to act on them. I always group people in three different ways. I heard this the other day, and I constantly said it after I heard it. People are either pessimists, they're optimists, or a lot of people don't realize you could be a possibilist, right? And you could be somebody that, and what's the difference between a possibilist and an optimist? Well, optimist is a positive thinker. A possibilist is somebody that is positive, but they're acting on things rather than saying, hey, that's a good idea, and I'm thinking positive and euphoria about something. A possibilist says, that's a good idea, but how do we act on this? And I think more people need to start shifting that, saying that they're optimists, looking into more of how they're going to really affect change and act on things. And maybe it doesn't come out the way that you think on, but that's fine, because the important thing is that you're acting on it. Action, to me, is the biggest thing. The difference between a good idea and a bad idea is a lot of bad ideas actually are good ideas. But the difference between a good idea and a bad idea is action.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I want to circle back because you said something a few minutes ago that I think was really important, that you don't just have to do a learning team after an event, right? And with everything you're saying too, that you know, you might have some learning sessions that don't go as planned. Can we normalize the learning team, right? Is it just something we do when something goes wrong or something frustrates us, or is it something we do on a regular basis? So, you know, as a start, hey, once a quarter, I'm just going to go do a learning team, whether something bad happened or not, right? And, you know, the other thing, you went into the whole action, and you mentioned how different people think differently. And that's so true that, you know, when you do a learning team, you're going to have different age groups that see the world differently and people have different exposures and they're all going to have their thing, right? But if you can get the group together, I think something that really helps people is the prioritization of the action. And so here's whatever our issue is, right? And let's just say, hey, here's three things. Here's three things we need to work on as an organization. Well, can we prioritize them? This is the immediate. This one's the one that we have a consensus that should be worked on first. This is the thing that we should work on over the next quarter or month or 6 months, whatever that time frame is. And this is the one that we need to work on by the end of the year. And so can we throw all that out here? Here's the issues. Here's what we think should be done to improve these issues, and this is the one that's the top priority. This is second. This is third. And I think that brings a little bit of an action plan, right? Because I mean, like you said, what's the difference between a good bad idea? The action. And so, can we have some timetables? Maybe give some responsibilities there. A little bit of accountability. Come back. How are we doing? And reassess.
So I think that's probably one of the most important things if you're trying to affect change or do something differently is, and it's a sense of accountability, is prioritizing, right? Because again, it goes back to the whole, hey, we talked about all these good things, all these good points, and we're going to try to put action on them and follow up on them. And you can mess up the whole process and the whole goal, the whole execution of something by trying to attack the heavy, the less, whatever, because you need these things in order for to make this happen. And so I think that is probably one of the most keys. That is the key to success in instituting, you know, action plans or things. And if you feel like you need to change or update, is prioritizing and being okay to breaking things up in threes, right? You want the short term, the midterm, and the long term, and then identify that. So maybe as you are meeting with your folks and everything, and you're like, you have these lists of desired items, right? And you don't want to discount, right? Just because it wasn't said or packaged correctly by somebody in the room does not mean that it was a bad idea.
Right.
It might can be reworded or retooled. And so finessed, yeah. Right? Get some right. Polishing on the edges. And then you break it out by saying, hey, let's just move this long term and just kind of bake it out a bit more to see if this is something that is still good. So break it up in three, short term, midterm, and long term, and understanding of things. And then remember that when somebody says this is a good idea or we're meeting, follow up. Don't procrastinate, because you want to take the air out of the room or the air out of the team. You will not follow up, and then you're creating a culture of we're just lip service and we're meeting to meet. And I think the key thing is the follow up and the action to those items. And if you can't do the action, make sure that those persons or people they understand that, hey, we may not be doing it this time. We might have to shift it to the midterm because more and this is why. And then get feedback. What do you think?
Okay, so Daniel, you hit on a really important one that one thing we see a lot in our culture assessment work is that, and you said perception's reality, right? That a lot of system changes take time, right? And also I'll see a lot of times that the worker has this perception that, well, we told management what we think and they didn't do anything about it. And then you go talk to management, and they're like, oh no, we're working on that. That's not a overnight change. I mean, here's what we've done, but we've got another 6 months to go before it's formally implemented. And so then the worker perceives they're not doing anything, and the management perceives, man, we've been working on this for 6 months, and it's all the lack of the follow through, the status updates that I think people need. Where are we at? Oh, whether it's we hired this person or we're tweaking a little bit of the grammar and a safety policy, or we shifted this responsibility to another department. Do we follow through with here's what we're doing? People need to hear that.
They need to hear that. And then again, goes back to self-reflect, you know, and kind of step back just a hair on, you know, it's amazing that when I see, you know, individuals or companies or what have you, they may not do well on this type of project, and they'll just do very well or somewhere else. So the organizational or this manager, they may have not done fit well within this team, but then they flourished and did well somewhere else. Or the individual of, you know, this one individual worker or somebody might have not done well here at this environment or what have you, but then you go over there and it's just like, wow, where did this person come from? I think it goes back to, again, it goes back to along those lines of sometimes, you know, you need to be open to change and change an environment and what have you. It's not always the individual, the organization, or the supervisor that is at fault or is not accomplishing whatever. A lot of times it goes back to, again, is that individual or that company or that supervisor, whatever that person is, are they empowered to move forward? I know we keep coming back to empowerment because I think more organizations and people have to really dig down to and really research that word empowerment and truly self-reflect and or truly put it out there. Are people feeling like they can speak up and step up and or open for room for change? And I think when you start doing that and stop talking as much as a supervisor or whatever your job is, and you right. do more listening, I think that you'll start seeing the improvement and setting those people up for success, and you'll start seeing that ball move down. It goes back to it. And I'm very passionate about this word because I do, I'd like to say that I do create environments, whether I'm doing something outside of work and I'm volunteering somewhere or even at work, and I do hire a young individual that doesn't have the most experience or whatever, and see them come in one way and then see them now develop of having experience with that. And if you ask me, why do you think this person succeeded here rather than there? And I tell people, because I just focus on this word empowerment. And then don't allow people to get in their way, bash them or what have you. If you just focus on how can I delegate certain things, how can I truly trust that person to do the task. Well, first, the culture affords it, right? You need to make sure that your culture within your organization or your company or what have you affords for that person to be set up for success, right? So I know I said a lot of things right there, but be open to change. It always goes back to empowerment and trusting that person is going to, if the person fails, you know, we're not all perfect. You know, expect for that. It goes back to human performance. Are we gonna be perfect? I tell everybody, you know, hey, yes, let's strive to be perfect. But everybody's like, it's impossible. We're not Jesus,
right?
But, you know, Vince Lombardi said it best. You know, when he was talking about perfection, you know, he talked about, you know, we're not gonna achieve perfection, but all the while, in the pursuit of perfection, we achieve excellence. And we want to, your job starts are not going to be perfect, but our end goal is that we want to be elite. We want to be that step ahead. And it starts with empowerment, empowering your workforce.
You know, it's funny you say all that because embracing mistakes was another topic I came across with empowerment. Can we embrace mistakes? All the error tolerance and all of that. We're not perfect. Hey, Daniel, I wanted to take you back to the Brave Stadium for a minute. And the reason why, I think a lot of what we've talked about are some major organizational changes where we're doing learning teams. And I know some people that listen to this might not have that kind of influence yet. And so a small scale version that any safety person could do right now is the joint safety walk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, help me out on my memory here because I'm a little foggy, but, you know, our buddy Lisa and you, you would do those safety walks where you had some other trade partner representatives walking with you. And, you know, it's not just the safety person walking around looking stuff. It was a team effort. And could we bring a worker or two, right? Could we bring a worker or two with a safety audit or walk and have them go with us? That's something you do, right? You do some of that kind of stuff. And can you talk about that for a minute?
We do. Pertaining to the Braves Stadium, I mean, that was Lisa. She's really good at, Lisa Kapp is really good at empowering folks and delegating and making sure that people, not only when she delegates and sets people up for success, you know, it's one of those where she's holding people accountable, making sure that this ball is moving. So specific to that project, I think, you know, Lisa did a really good job at leading the way to ensure that, you know, everybody walks and talks and gets out of their own comfort zone. So a lot of times it's one of those, you know, if you're a safety director and you want to kind of mix things up because we got tunnel vision, or you're a superintendent or whatever your title is, get out your comfort zone, get out your project, or get out, if you're in charge of one area of the project, get out of that silo and try to walk somebody else's area, and then be inviting to other people, inviting them to your area, and then be open to feedback. Too many of us are so proud of what we're doing and think that, you know, our stuff doesn't stink and, you know, I'm holier than thou, and you want the feedback, but are you presenting yourself in such a way that you are open to the feedback? Because again, we're not all perfect. And so it goes back to those team walks of understanding of that, of, hey, come to the job site, let me know, and humble yourself when the feedback is right. And then again, a sense of empowerment, right? Of if empower that person to just be, you know, let their hair down and just, you know, tell me about my ugly baby. I get it. You know, not all babies are, you know, tell me about my ugly baby. I know my baby ain't the prettiest, yeah, but
you should see my dog.
You know, be okay with that. Be okay with that feedback, yeah. But empowering that person. So it's not just, again, if you're a supervisor or an individual, empowerment has many different roots to it, right? A tree doesn't have just one root. It has several roots. So it's not just one route that comes off and says, hey, I'm a supervisor, I'm empowering this. No, there's several different paths to empowerment. It comes in different shapes and forms and sizes. And it could be a colleague on colleague or company on company that's walking the job sites that are just moving the ball and providing feedback for improvement. What is the desired task and end game? And I think it goes back to saying, hey, come to my job site, let's walk in different areas. And that is a key thing is when you have other contractors and or teams walking various different job sites and areas, providing, you know, feedback, positive and negative or existent, of like, hey, you know, I know walking other colleagues' job sites, we have certain things on our job sites because I did walk somebody else's job site. There's a job site at Piedmont that I walked with Lisa that there was a hard barricade way back when. I'm like, wow, that creates a presence of safety that I want to see on my job sites. I instituted a policy or a thing. It's like, hey, we're going to purchase these. And if it's a step above your caution tape that just whips around on your job site or your danger tape, it's a hard barricade. And again, it creates it. But that's one engagement thing that I saw that I felt empowered to say, you know what? I would like these things. So it's encouraged that folks do get out, walk around, whether on the job sites, and that's not your area, or be inviting for folks to come on your job site.
Definitely. Okay. So if you can't change your whole corporate structure and do all the learning team stuff and everything else we talked about, I think anybody could grab a couple workers and do a safety walk and tell me what you see. Help me see the world through your eyes. That's an easy thing anybody could do. We talked a lot about having workers involved in developing safety policy. We talked about embracing mistakes. We definitely talked a lot about the whole leadership skill set development, the learning teams. One other concept I came across when we were looking at empowerment was recognizing and celebrating achievements. And, you know, where's the positive reinforcement back to that? How are we reinforcing empowerment? You know, if somebody's feeling more empowered, great and wonderful, what are we doing to reinforce that? And how do we celebrate it? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I think so many times people want to say, hey, I heard Philip talk about, positive reinforcement. I'm going to go out and spend $10,000 and go get a bunch of gift cards and throw it at people as they walk by. And so I guess you got to ask your question yourself is
send them to me.
Exactly. Yeah. I think when people just keep it simple, stupid, right? Keep it simple, stupid. Like, don't overthink things, right? Positive. I think if we said anything today, I think that more and more people, if you don't have positive reinforcement in your walkthroughs and you're not, and if you have folks all around you, if you're not encouraging people to really focus on positive reinforcement, I think you're doing a disservice to anything, right? It's one thing to go out, right, and hold people accountable, but I challenge each person's right to go out and something as simple as saying, hey, good job for standing on that ladder correctly. And hey, why don't you challenge yourself even further and say it in a different language? Why does it matter? What would that change? A handful of my safety professionals on job sites, what they do is they write one phrase in Spanish every week on the whiteboard in their conference room, right? And then the team tries to practice that phrase or those words and everything else like that, that then they're able to communicate out in the field. You know, close to 80% of our workforce is of a different language speaking. So how do you challenge yourself to positive reinforce, right? But go a step further. Say it in a different language. I challenge you. But then also, how do you do it in such a way where you're not creating this policy? I need an incentive program. I need to go. And those are good. I'm not going to discount them, yeah. Right? Different phrases. But if we're going to keep it simple, stupid, to really figure out how we can really, truly, you know, cast a net, a broad net to really affect change, right? Right away. It's as simple. And I challenge you that are listening in any industry or any setting, I challenge you to look at somebody, give them a positive feedback, and just look at their emotions on what that does. It's actually more contagious than a negative push on, hey, I'm going to hold you accountable because it's my job.
Right.
I challenge you and just look at the emotional, you know, facial components and then you come back in that area and you see that person's more likely to want to talk to you or you see their posture. A lot of times I walk on a job site, I see, you know, how is the flow of everything going? I'm looking at the environment of like what is being created out there. And it's not people hiding and doing this and doing that. It's hey, showing and hey, how are you doing personally and various other things. I know it sounds, you know, squishy and you're like, well, Daniel, you don't know where I'm working at, whatever. I guarantee you, if you start trying to take the approach of positive reinforcement, you're empowering that person to want to now do something differently. You're empowering that organization to do something differently. And it's been proven. And I've actually, you know, I've participated in various different committees, both locally and nationally. And a lot of times, you know, when it's being brought up and you get the committee talking about positive reinforcement, you get various different ideas and we end up actually talking a lot longer on that topic because it's so important. I think a lot of organizations and professionals, they miss that. They miss that part, right? You know, just self-reflect on yourself. Would you rather, you know, your boss, you want to be recognized for what you do. You know, you always hear the saying that, you know, I do 1,001 thing, good things, but it's that one wrong thing that then sets you back. Well,
definitely.
How do we, you know, focus on 1,000 good things and produce another 1,000 good things and realize you are human and you will do that wrong thing. It's human performance.
What happens right after you notice somebody feeling empowered, right? If they feel empowered to share an idea with you, what is the thing that happens right after that? Are they given the positive feedback? Are they given the thank yous, the words of affirmation, or that will never work? Yes, we definitely need to reinforce and grow the empowerment for sure.
And if you're given the positive reinforcement and then you now do the accountability factor, you'll actually start seeing people feel more disappointed in self. Rather than you approach the accountability like head on multiple different times, they're really looking at this safety professional that's whatever type of word you want they create in their head. Beep, 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 beep. You know, they're looking at that person externally more so than self, right? But I've found that, you know, if you focus on positive reinforcement and then you try to multiply, now when it's like, dude, like, you know, I'm kind of disappointed that you're actually doing these things and what's next? And you'll actually start seeing that person will start, you know, self-reflecting and punishing self because they feel a level of disappointment, right? And then you'll get them breakdown. Hey, man, you know, my supervisor, right? They're this, that, and the other. You talk to the supervisor, it's really my company and, you know, the timeline and various other things. And you'll start really understanding and opening a whole nother set of doors to true communication of let's really get to the roots and understanding of why things are happening right on the job sites, not just because individual is really trying to show up at the job site so you can come, you know, yell at them. It's not that.
Definitely. Well, Daniel, man, I always appreciate all the influence that you give our industry and all the charitable extra time you spend trying to empower and help others. Any final thoughts that you want to share?
My final thought is that if I think that people should do more and focus on the why and truly look at the words like, why is mentorship important? Why is repetition important? Why is learning teams important? And understand that, yes, you are busy, but if you focus on, there are these magic little ingredients that we can find to help the industry and effect change around you and your community. And if you focus on the importance of that, I think you'll start seeing more positive things happen. Now, whether it affects you directly or externally or what have you, it always comes back full circle. And I think that if more and more people understand the importance of empowerment and empowering the workforce, I think that we'll start seeing more positives out there. Now, whether it be rates coming down of accidents or less defects or anything, I think that if you really start humbling yourself and understanding that there are generational shifts, there are economic factors, there is a presidential year, there are all these factors that are going in the play here that produce negative thoughts. And I Definitely. Think if we really focus on being possibilist and understanding that we need to act on things and being positive about things, I think we'll start changing the environmental and the environment around us and the culture around us, and you'll start seeing more positive results. And I really feel like people need to understand and research more and get out their bubble and understand that you can do more and in the why in it.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for your influence, Daniel. You're a great man. We're blessed to have you in our industry.
This was just a good conversation of many that you and I have, and we just happened to record it. And I said that last time, and I'm saying again, and I just enjoy our conversations and look forward to many, many more.
All right. Hope you all have a very empowered day.
Hey there. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave me a review. If you want to connect further, reach out at leaderthink.com.